In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we're talking to Elliot Serrano. Elliot wears two hats in the comic book biz. He's a writer for Dynamite Entertainment, including an upcoming miniseries featuring Ash from Army of Darkness with Barack Obama. But he's also a reviewer for Comic Culture Warrior and the columns and videos called Geek to Me, which he provides for the Chicago daily paper, The Red Eye. We'll talk with Elliot in his capacity as a writer and reviewer and not only discuss his current issues for Dynamite, but also what he thinks of some of the big comic book events that are happening right now.
Well, let's start with Ash versus Obama. You were just telling me it's a four-issue miniseries. What else can you tell us about it?
Four-issue miniseries featuring the convergence of two of the biggest characters in comics right now, meaning Obama and me.
Nice. All right.
Now, actually, Ashley J. Williams of the Army of Darkness series finds themselves crossing paths in a way with the new elected leader of the free world, Mr. Barack Hussein Obama. And it born from the idea that that with the current president appearing in comic books meant that, you know, you'd have a successful selling comic book, Dynamite decided to dive in and put their hat in the ring and try to capitalize on what many call the Obama effect.
Okay.
And they thought the best match in the Dynamite universe, at least, was with Ash, or at least would give you the most interesting match. I think superpowers would have rocked.
I was going to say, they've got a president in superpowers. I was going to say Zorro versus Obama probably wasn't going to work.
No.
Lone Ranger, no.
Unless it's a time travel.
Right.
And then even then you have Ash. I mean, although have Ash pulling Obama back in time and dropping him in Zorro's time. See, I should have pitched that. It could have been like an Army of Darkness Zorro crossover. Then again, though, I guess we couldn't do crossovers. It's a funny thing. As the script was being written, I was doing some interesting little bits in it, and the licensors who had the say-so, final say-so on what happens, were kind of nixing certain things that I was doing. Mind you, all in good fun and all in tongue-in-cheek, but they were not too keen on the idea of there being crossovers, which is funny because the theme of the entire miniseries is ridiculous crossovers.
Sure.
If you read the four issues, you will. You know, I kind of poke fun at everything. Of course, I poke fun at Obama appearing in all these different comic books and the whole merchandising blitz that has occurred as a result of his being elected president. I poke fun at the whole series starts in a comic book convention. So I poke fun a little bit at comic books and fanboys. I mean, no, I admit straight up I am a fanboy as well. But I poke a little fun at comic conventions and the little obsessions that fanboys have. And then, let's see, we take shots at Hollywood. We take shots at some politicians. And the whole thing ends up in a big blowout. I won't say where, but let's just say everything but the kitchen sink. And I'm thinking if Ariel Padilla is not hating me by the end of the series, we'll throw a kitchen sink in there somewhere in the end. So.
Very nice.
But it's been a lot of fun, and I've tried to write it very self-aware. Yes, I know a lot of folks are kind of, over the whole Obama thing, and we tried to get this book done a little bit sooner, so it could be more in the middle of the whole the whole craze that was going on. But to me, I think we have the advantage in that we can look back on a lot of stuff that's already been done and kind of poke fun at it.
Okay. Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, you can't help but notice that now, entering the fourth quarter of his first year, the love fest might be simmering down based on some of the town hall meetings that are going on in the country.
Well, it's funny too because I've had some comments made. It starts off with Obama dealing with the auto industry, and right now the big hot topic, yes, is the healthcare reform.
Sure.
It's So someone said, well, have Ash and Obama fighting a bunch of right-wing anti-reform deadites.
Nice.
But while it's funny, and it's only going to be funny for some, I really did try to avoid too much political commentary in this, too, because even more so than having, you know, a sitting president appear in your comic book, if anything's going to make your book seem dated, is commenting on the current political, you know, scene. You know, those Vietnam comics are very timely.
Well, you know, or you're right. If you go through the Marvel Essentials, yeah, you see references to the Godfather movie in 1971 or 72. And you're right, Vietnam, everything that was going on was, you know, fair game. But, of course, back then, you know, comics were more of a disposable medium.
Correct.
And nowadays, you know, they're there for posterity. And you already have made your mark on the world of Ash. What was your previous miniseries with Ash? Didn't you do something already?
I've done two works.
There you go.
I did a 4-issue mini. I partnered with Brandon Jerwa on that. It was Xena Army of Darkness Volume 2.
Cool.
Volume 1 was written by the supremely talented John Layman, who many know. He writes Chew now.
Yes.
For Image with Rob Guillory. Awesome book. I have to drop a plug in there for that. It's one of my top five favorite books right now. But he did the first Xena Army of Darkness mini for Dynamite at issue 4. Certain issues between, I guess, him and Dynamite, you know, he didn't finish the miniseries.
Okay.
So Brandon Jura was asked to come in, and with John's blessing, he came in and finished the mini. And after that, Dynamite asked Brandon if he'd be interested in writing a sequel. Right before then, though, Brandon, knowing that he wasn't as strong with Army of Darkness or the Army of Darkness mythos as he'd like to be, he had asked me if I would ever be interested in working on a AOD book with him. And lo and behold, the opportunity to do Xena Army of Darkness arose. And we partnered on that, had a lot of fun. After that, Joe Rybant, editor at Dynamite, said he liked my work enough that he'd give me a shot. You know, put the big boy pants on.
Great.
You know, no partner, no net, nobody to bail me out. It was me on my own. I wrote Army of Darkness number 18. It was a standalone story, a one-and-done, telling a untold tale of Ash's past called Montezuma's Revenge, where Ash ventures south of the border to take on the resurrected King Montezuma. And I just discovered just recently, the artist on the book, legendary Dave Simon, a great old-school Marvel artist, this was his last work. And I'm kind of honored to know that my script is the last thing that he did before passing on. So
wow,
that was really something. Joe actually told me that, and I was kind of flattened at that point.
Sure.
Because Dave really, he took my script and he put such wonderful touches with the art there, and just to know that to me it's really. To know that it's the last thing he ever did was something that I wrote is just truly an honor. So that's my previous experience in the Army of Darkness world, and Joe Rybant was pleased enough with those efforts. And he also knows I'm kind of a political nut.
Okay.
I'm one of those CNBC, CNN, C-SPAN, almost anything with a C in front of it. You know, I watch it, I follow things, I try to be as politically aware as I can, which is why I'm getting a real kick out of the current healthcare reform debacle. And I thought, you can't write this stuff. It's so bizarre, and in a way, if it didn't upset you so much, you'd laugh. You know, just the level that the rhetoric has gotten to.
Oh, the histrionics are amazing. No, I agree.
But having all that and knowing that I have a certain feel for dealing with political issues, Joe said, "Hey, give it a shot." And I actually pitched a somewhat different take on Ash, an Ash Obama crossover, which it was really more Army of Darkness meets Escape from New York.
Okay.
And it would have been more just like a slam bang, more like that, a slam bang action. Ash has to rescue the president, and but it's the president of the United States in the middle of an Army of Darkness movie, and all the tropes that people get from those films. But then it didn't fly. The folks at Dynamite said, we don't know if that can really work having Obama in that.
Okay.
And so they actually changed their mind for a bit, said, okay, we're not going to be able to do this because I guess the licensors were having an issue with having a crossover of that type.
Interesting. So it's more the Ash licensors versus any vetting from the White House. I mean, I realize Obama's a public figure, but you know, I'm also curious about that end of it. Do they have to go through any hoops with the White House or anything?
I don't know. I mean, although there were a couple things, I was asked at one point to incorporate the Obama girls. They said, Elliot, if there's some way to put the girls in there, because they wanted me like to make it like the all of them are in peril.
Okay.
And I know, and it wasn't that, I know for a fact that the Obamas do not like that.
Okay.
They don't like the idea that, Barack Obama, President Obama and the First Lady have accepted that they are public figures and they know that they're going to show up on Mad Magazine covers and all that
right.
kind of stuff. But they do not want the children being featured in anything.
That's
and
fine.
I went back to Joe and I said, they're not really keen on that idea. They've expressed that. He said, okay, then drop it.
Okay.
So that was really the kind of thing that you kept, I tried to keep in mind. And there is a reference to the girls in the book, but they don't actually appear.
Okay.
And Bo Obama, the dog, does appear. when I was asked to put Bo in, I said, you realize if you make me put the dog in the book, I'm going to have to do certain things with him. And they said, sure, go ahead. So I don't want to give anything away.
All right.
Except to say Bo will be touched by the Necronomicon.
Fantastic. All right, that's cool, man. And it comes out next week.
It comes out August 19th.
Very cool.
And I'll be doing a signing at Challengers Comics and Conversation. So I'll be at Challengers on the 19th to do a signing, and then the following weekend I will be at Dreamland Comics, my regular stomping grounds in Schaumburg, Illinois, to also sign Ash Chase Obama numero uno.
Very cool. And that's a great store. I haven't been to Dreamland. I've been to Challengers, of course. I'm sure Dreamland is a fine store. That is your backdrop when you shoot your Geek to Me videos, correct?
Geek to Me and Comic Culture Warrior.
Fantastic.
Yeah, because when I first started doing Geek to Me, I was just doing them anywhere I could find a spot.
Sure.
But I thought having a decent backdrop and I'd have more control of my environment, and the manager at Dreamland is really cool. But also, Patrick Brower and Dal Bush at Challengers are great too. They don't whenever I go there to do video, they're always very supportive.
Absolutely,
they let me do things there. So, both two great places to go to visit and for me to do some features. But Geek to Me and Comic Culture Warrior, which actually is how I started with the online video stuff.
Oh, okay.
Comic Culture Warrior, actually, I credit that for getting me the attention that I've gotten over time. And Comic Culture Warrior also helped me land the Geek Features writing position at the Red Eye, the Chicago Red Eye.
Excellent. Well, all right, Comic Culture Warrior, what year did you start doing that?
Oh, geez. I started that, I want to say, 3 years ago.
Okay.
It first started off with writing columns for the Comics Waiting Room, comicswaitingroom.com, and started a feature that was called Comic Culture Warrior, and then I wanted to do a video because I told Mark Mason, the editor-in-chief of CWR, that people don't just want to sit at their desk and read all the time. You know, the multimedia is the way to go, so we would do things like, video interviews, podcasts of the like. the Comic Culture Warrior column led to the Comic Culture Warrior video channel, where I would partner with a buddy of mine who's also the vendor at Dreamland Comics, Jose Melendez. And Jose Melendez is probably one of the more interesting personalities you're ever going to meet in comics. He's, I call him Angry Fanboy.
Okay.
And I'm going to come out and say it. We are the Siskel and Ebert of comics. That's
okay.
What we are.
All right.
We talk about comics, and we are the Siskel and Ebert of comics because he's skinny and opinionated, and I'm fat.
Okay.
So, you know, that he's the Siskel, I'm the Ebert.
All right.
And there's no one else out there laying claim to that, so we're taking it.
All right, fair enough.
If you want to see some spirited conversation about comics, Jose, from the perspective of someone who works in a comic shop, who's read comics, who loves comics, and then my position as someone who works in the industry, it always makes for interesting conversation, and we get a lot of great comments and feedback. We have a very loyal fan following that watches the show regularly, always on me for to post new videos, and it's just a lot of fun to do. And you know, as you know,
absolutely,
you know, you meet so many crazy personalities in the comics business. It's another way to explore it. And then, of course, as I said, that led to the Red Eye.
Okay, now, do you have videos at a Red Eye website, or is everything on YouTube? What's the best way for people to find your videos?
Of course, the Comic Culture Warrior channel is at youtube.com/comicculturewarrior. You can also check out my blog for the Chicago Red Eye, which is at chicagonow.com/blogs/geektome. And this is the funny thing. When you enter geek to me, it has to be geek-to-me.
Okay.
I'm trying to fix that. And both of those, you'll find videos from both geek to me, where it's just myself doing interviews and commentary on comics, and Comic Culture Warrior would be myself with Jose Melendez, where we do our Siskel and Ebert routine. And
very cool.
You can also read my blog. And the Comic Culture Warrior video channel also has a companion blog called comicculturewarrior.wordpress.com.
Excellent. Now, I understand you were at San Diego this year.
Oh, yes.
I saw your Ted Raimi video, and I'm trying to remember another Comic-Con video I've seen so far.
Rich Johnston.
Thank you. Yes, that's right.
He licked my face. Rich Johnston licked my face. That was like the first thing I Twittered when the interview was over. I mean, here I am, and I'm good friends with David Marks of Avatar Press, and I walk by the booth. I see David at every convention. You know, Avatar is a local publisher. There are some good folks. He has some top talent, and they've got Rich Johnston there. For of course, promoting Bleeding Cool, which is part of the Avatar family now.
Yes.
And there was kind of a lull, and I asked Rich. I go, hey, would you mind doing an interview for the Red Eye? You know, the Chicago, Chicago paper, and you know, get you some exposure here across the pond. And he was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And I'm kind of, you know, this is me walking in blind. I don't have anything prepared. I expected him fully, you know, to say, no, I don't have any time right now. There's too much going on. But no, he threw me a curve and said he'd do it. And we had a nice, you know, little conversation about Bleeding Cool and what it's like to be a quote-unquote journalist in the comics community. And at the end, he totally faked me out. I thought he was saying, I've got to go. I thought he was pulling a Bill Gates on me.
Okay.
He says, I've got to go. I've got a meeting. And he walks off camera. And I'm doing my closing to the camera. My camera person is just trying to keep the shot, and I'm doing the closing. And out of the corner of my eye, I see Rich Johnston double back and go behind my camera person and come up on the other side of me, grabs my face in the middle of my closing, grabs my face, gives I get a full tongue bath on the side of my face,
yeah.
And my glasses fall off.
Nice.
And then he runs.
Well, sure.
And that's the last I saw of him.
There you go. Fantastic.
So, needless to say, You know how people say I'll never wash that hand again, or I'll never wash that face again.
I hope you boiled your ear immediately.
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Definitely.
Yeah. Very
well,
nice.
Rich Johnson is he is a patient zero when it comes to H1N1. He's the one who's passing it around. he is Mr.
Nice.
Mr. Swine Virus.
Right? I understand. Oh no! Now you know. Now,
I kid Rich because I love Rich.
How many San Diegos have you been to now?
I've been to four. Can you believe that? Just four, but I feel like I've been to all of them.
No, I understand, and I'm curious about this year because certainly it seems like more than ever, and I've missed the last two, but it seems like more than ever from what I read and what I see that it's just becoming more and more of the pop culture auto show. That's what it feels like to me. I mean, and especially now, movies and TV every year have become a bigger and bigger part of the show. Comics still has its place, but it seems like it's becoming an afterthought, frankly, at Comic-Con.
You know, I like that terminology, the pop culture auto show. Because I remember those auto shows as a kid where you'd go to see the Batmobile and the General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard and the Munster Mobile and all that. And you're right. So many people flock to this, and you want to believe that it's because they're really into comics. But let's be honest. They were there to see the folks from Twilight. They were there to see the folks from Heroes, all the television and movie folks. Comic books, you're right, we're sort of an afterthought.
Well, and also, like last year, The Office was there. I mean, it's one thing to have genre fiction represented. Now it seems like comedy is part of Comic-Con.
Right, right.
And that just really, it fascinates me. It's okay. There's more room there isn't more room in the pool because we know there's 125,000 people is a lot of people. But, I mean, I'm not a Twilight hater. I know that they were a big part this year. And I'm going to be having a couple more conversations about Comic-Con. But I'm fascinated for the people who went and who have been there for previous years as well. You know, can you see the sea change? I mean, for a couple years ago, it felt like the computer games were kind of encroaching more and more. But now I think, again, TV and movie have more than ever really kind of moved over and taken their route.
Yeah, I've started going, mind you, it was, to me, going to San Diego was always that dream.
It's sure.
You know, it's like when you're a kid, you want to go to Disney World.
Absolutely, exactly.
But you know,
it's our Mecca. It's our Cooperstown.
Right, exactly. And you know, coming from a family of modest means, you know, I didn't go to Disney World until I grew up and paid for my own darn plane ticket. But you know, same with Comic-Con. And I went, and I think I went around the time when the hold of video games was kind of lessening, and yes, films and television were really taking over. Which, quite frankly, surprised me that it took this long to get there. I know that there's that cycle in Hollywood where, you know, comic books and the geek market are in, and then they run that into the ground for a while, and then they say, you know, there's no money to be made in superhero movies and the like, and then they forget about it, and then comic books get a chance to breathe again and be their own thing again. Until somebody creates another, let's say, Dark Knight Returns, or the Dark Knight, and then comics start getting choked again. Even more so, what got me was even with San Diego was what happened here in Chicago with the Chicago Comic Con, formerly Wizard World.
Yes, I want to talk about that as well.
Yeah, where some of the publishers pulled out. And that to me was a greater sea change than what I saw with the San Diego Con.
Yeah, but
mind you, I've been going to Wizard World. I still call it Wizard World.
Sure.
Just like some people call the Cell, you know, the White Sox Park. They call it. I still call it Comiskey.
Yeah, me too, man.
I don't care
man.
What you call it. I still call it Comiskey.
I don't care who the sponsor is either. It's Comiskey Park. Exactly.
But I noticed more of a change with the Chicago Comic-Con than with San Diego.
Yeah, but that's more, I think, from Garib Sheamus' standpoint, a combination of this promoter is changing his show on purpose, but I see San Diego as more of an industry change rather than, you know, Garib is, I think, consciously doing this, partially because I don't know how much he's locked into that first weekend in August, but because last year, as you know, it was in June, and I think when there is enough space, I do think the publishers will respond and show up at a Garib Sheamus event. I think he might be changing things and not calling it Wizard World anymore, but I do think that the publishers, if it's far enough away from San Diego, will come back. But 9 days after San Diego, and then 3 weeks after that is Toronto, I just think that's too much, especially in this year's economy, to expect DC or Marvel to tear down, put up, tear down, pull up, and do this 3 times in 1 month. I think that's a lot for any company.
Oh, no, I agree. And even without the economy, I had my con hangover after San Diego. And it seemed like, you know, when you go right into another convention, not 2 weeks later, it's really hard to muster up that same kind of energy that you had.
Absolutely.
You know, going to San Diego, for folks who've never gone, that's kind of a marathon. I mean, you're bombarded with a lot of stuff, and if you go... Even if you go just to enjoy the convention, that it really demands a lot of you to stay focused and to find things and to work your way through the crowds and to really just get the most of it as you can. So when I'm, you know, getting back from San Diego and barely getting enough sleep, jumping right into ChicagoCon, I felt like I hadn't even left San Diego.
Sure.
My body was like, what are you doing to me? and I'm sorry, I have a tremendous amount of of respect for Garib Sheamus, but, you know, when you're going to bring the bags for the show, make sure they don't have the New York skyline on them. You know, they should have the Chicago skyline, the greatest skyline in the world. You can, you know, you got your Empire State Building. Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Very quaint. It makes a wonderful paperweight. We've got the Big Willie. The Big Willie
that's
in Chicago.
Is that what we're calling? That's what we're calling the Sears now. The Big Willie.
Well, it's the Willis Tower, but
yeah.
Again, I'm calling it the Sears, just like it's, you know, it's Comiskey, and if someone ever buys Wrigley Field, it'll always be Wrigley Field.
I'm with you. Well, and that's okay. Now, what other big panels were you at San Diego? Were you at any big panels? I mean, it's.
Well, I was invited to be. Oh, in San Diego.
Yes.
That was the other thing too. When you go as press, you don't get any special treatment to be saved any panels. So I didn't go to any panels, but I did go to some press events. I went to the Angel of Death press event.
Oh, good.
And, you know, talked to Ed Brubaker and Zoe Bell. That's how I got to talk to Ted Raimi.
Very cool.
A little video interview that we did.
What'd you think of Angel of Death?
It was fun.
Yeah, I think it turned out really well.
It is. I have to say, you know, talking to the director and the producer and the whole crew, you sit here and you go, wow, why aren't more movies made like this? Why do you have to spend so much money to make, you know, pretty much bland crap? And you something like Angel of Death that, you know, costs a few mil in pocket change, looks real nice, very polished.
Yep.
Is it the most no? Is it an Oscar nominated cast? No, but they're all very sincere. They give it their best effort. It's a fun script, a fun story. Anybody can watch it. You know, I've shown it to friends who are not even big Brubaker fans. But they sit down and they watch it and they have a good time.
Sure, it's a straight up shoot 'em up action crime movie. I mean, right. You know, above anything else. I mean, yeah, you don't need to know that Ed's, you know, the comic book master that he is. That's all right.
And the crew is really, you know, you sit down and you talk with them and they're really sincere and great and you just have a lot of fun getting to know these folks, and it makes you appreciate what they do even more. And then I got to talk to the crew of The Collector, the horror thriller that premiered a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of local guys, you know, from out here, from Macomb and Evanston, Illinois, and just a bunch of great folks. That I think it's funny that there is so much talent now. I'm discovering that comes out of the Midwest, especially out of Chicago, that I don't even need to go to San Diego anymore to talk to a lot of folks. And
no, there's a very healthy community in Chicago, and I think the podcasting listeners are well aware of that because they all dot our broadcast, so that's very nice. And you're right, I think from that standpoint, that's why next month's Windy City show is going to be a great show, because if we just call on the local talent, there's literally going to be 50 to 70 people showing up, on top of the people that from out of town that we've been able to get to come out for the convention as well. So, no, Chicago's fine. Now, you started to say for the con, am I guessing right, you were part of the Dynamite panel?
Yeah, with a whole bunch of bigger names than mine.
I know Matt Wagner was there.
Matt Wagner was there. I had the fanboy, I just had a geekgasm, I call it. I sat next to Matt Wagner during the panel.
Wow.
I was sitting in the back because there weren't enough chairs for everyone to sit up on the table. And, you know, I'm going to tell Jim Kruger he needs to sit behind me. So I said, no, guys, go on ahead. People are here to talk to you guys. They're here to talk to you. And they sat, and then Matt Wagner showed up late, like just as the panel had started, and he came and he said, no, I think Jai Nitz was ready to give up his seat, and Matt said, no, don't worry about it, and he sat down in the back row with me. So actually, I have a picture of myself and Matt Wagner sitting in the back row of the Dynamite panel on my Facebook page. So
very nice.
You can see that there. But it was great, and Dynamite is one of those companies where they really let the creators, you know, do their thing. Nick Barucci is a fun guy to work for, and Joe Riband, my editor, I will step in front of a bus for him. I will.
Okay.
He is, you know, by far one of the great, great talents in this business, and it's only because of him that, you know, I enjoy this work so much. So being on that panel was a lot of fun, you know, but it was mostly about superpowers. People came to talk about superpowers. I went there to talk about superpowers. I've been dying to ask Matt Wagner, when are we getting Mage 3?
Everyone wants to know that. I understand.
I want Mage 3. Come on, Matt.
Well,
Matt, if you're listening, tell Matt that we talk about him. Where's Mage 3?
Well, no one asked that at the panel?
No.
Well,
yeah, which is a funny thing. And I think you know, I think is you have to be total old school, hardcore fanboy to talk about Mage. You know, I mean, I think it's you, me, Kevin Smith. I think we're it.
Well, I don't know. I interviewed Matt at the FX show in Orlando a couple of years ago, and certainly the question came up, and I know Matt's answer to that is, you know, it's the three ages of man, and when he's ready to write that story, he will,
right.
And it's got to come to him, and it's got to feel natural.
Right,
And I would rather him wait for it to be right than have him force it. Because, you know, I think it's been too long, and I don't want to see Matt, you know, half-ass it, and I know he's not that kind of creator. And also, God, there's a guy, and I think you're right, I think you need years of perspective to appreciate how great he is, not only as an artist, but a writer. All the characters that he's, you know, touched, he's the most unsung Batman writer.
Oh, God,
You know, the guy, every time he touches Batman, he hits it out of the park.
Uh-huh.
And nobody, you know, and taking nothing away from the first name that's on everyone's lips, like Frank Miller and Denny O'Neill and Greg Rucka and you name it, any of your favorite Batman writers. But Matt's got to be in the team picture.
Oh, no, Matt is definitely. He is. And, you know, the thing that gets me is he is not one of those persons to go out and seek those accolades.
No.
And he's not going to toot his own horn. I mean, yeah, he's going to go up there and he's going to tell you a good story. And if you disagree with him on it, he'll tell you why. But no, that most certainly, and you know, he is by far, you know, to me one of the talents that he is one of the talents that actually got me into really reading comics. I mean, when I was in high school, you know, reading of course, you know, we all read Mage, The Hero Discovered, and then The Hero Defined, and that really taught me a lot about, you know, again, writing the hero's journey, you know, the changes that a character goes through. You know, how these, you know, how they encounter all these experiences that touch them, and how death is around every corner, and the fact that Mirth has died killed me. You know, so I'm just babbling here about Matt Wagner, which is easy for me to do.
Fair enough.
The guy's a genius.
I'm with you.
You know, so, you know, and to know that I'm working for the same company as him, it's just like, that blows me away. I mean, I did not sell my soul to the devil, Just so you all know.
Very good.
That comes later.
All right.
Not yet.
Now, are you trying to pitch any superpower ideas to Dynamite?
No.
No? No interest?
No, superpowers is in really good hands right now. And when I learned that Giant Nits was coming on board to do some stuff, I was like, oh, I'm done.
Okay.
That guy is so... He is superior to me as a writer in every possible way. So there's no way. It's like you go to the dance, you see the pretty girl in the corner, and you think, oh, I've got a shot. You know, I'm not the best-looking guy here, but, you know, I'm kind of decent, and I'll ask her out. But then the captain of the football team walks in, and then you know it's over. You don't stand a chance. So, you know, Jai Nitz is the captain of the football team when it comes to writing comics. And I said, I just stepped back and said, dude, you've got the floor. It's yours. I'll hang out with the, you know, the geeky girl with the really bad retainer.
That's Ash, huh? Okay.
Well, yeah, Ash is, you know, you gotta know him to love him, you know?
All right. Fair enough.
Which is, you know, and I do. I'm not going to denigrate the character. I love Ash. There are two characters three characters in fiction right now that originate in film that, you know, to me they're the holy trinity as far as characters I could work on. Ash, Indiana Jones, and Luke Skywalker. And I've gotten a chance to work on Ash. Now, if whether Indy and Luke ever come along, we'll never, I don't know. A friend of mine, actually, for my birthday, and I showed this on the Comic Culture Warrior show a few months ago, she got me a really cool painting of Ash dressed as Luke Skywalker. And I go, you know me better than my mom would right now, because that was like bringing two of my worlds together.
Very nice.
But, so, I mean, I love the character of Ash, and every time I get a chance to write him, it is just a joy. It's a joy, and if he's the only character I ever got to write, you wouldn't see me complain.
Very cool. Well, now, back to Chicago Comic Con. We've had a week now to kind of digest, and I got to be honest, as I was kind of concerned, but I have to say, as much as I missed having the big two there from a booth standpoint, it still was an enjoyable con. And also with C2E2 coming to Chicago in April, I don't mind there being a second, more broader-based, you know, pop culture con. It makes me curious to see what they're going to do with C2E2, and I think positioned in the spring, it has a better opportunity not to have the big two represented, and actually Dark Horse as well. They've all said they're on board. But, you know, it'll be interesting to compare C2E2 to the New York convention, which I've also been going to, and that's kind of become a mini San Diego, and positioned well enough away from San Diego that the movie companies still show up, and there's a big presence there, both movies and TV, and a lot of things are pre-screened. So I'll be curious to see if we get that as well at C2E2.
Yeah, I had an opportunity, I'm afraid I kind of dropped the ball on it, but I was given the opportunity to meet with a couple of the organizers of C2E2 in my capacity as a writer for the Red Eye, and I missed that. Everything I've been hearing and all their pre-press, I mean, I get a lot of pre-press materials from them and you know, you get little behind-the-scenes stuff. It looks to me like, yeah, they want to bring something to that level of, let's say, San Diego here. I've never been to New York.
Well, again, I don't think anything will match San Diego. I think they're setting their sights realistically. It's comparing it to New York. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because the McCormick Center is a monster.
Yes, it is.
And there's a lot you can do there. Though, again, do you really want to just go nuts in that place? Because then you do run the risk of becoming the San Diego show, which I don't think is necessarily a good thing.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about that. Just because, again, the other thing that San Diego certainly benefits from is being an hour away from Los Angeles. So I think it is a lot easier to accommodate San Diego with everyone, you know, being in L.A.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, making the special trip to the middle of the country. But again, in the spring, I do think, you know, you'll see a fair amount of TV and movie representation. And I'm optimistic. I've been to three of the four New York shows since it's come back in 2006, and they put on a good show. They do a good job, and also the comic component to the show is still very important and well represented. And I'm hoping again, because it's New York. By the same token, a lot of the Starankos and the old guard, Denny O'Neill, some of the creators that are getting up in years that live on the East Coast, it's easier for them to get to that show. So it will be an interesting challenge to see who's willing to come to Chicago, as they were willing to do for decades before San Diego became what it is. I mean, the Chicago Comic-Con for years was the biggest show.
Yeah, but I guess if there's any sort of drawback for the C2E2 show, and the venue itself is more than capable of accommodating the number of people.
Oh yeah,
but lodging when you want to stay there, I mean that's going to be something. I'm telling you. And
there's certainly enough hotels in downtown Chicago. I don't think it's going to be
a big problem. There are plenty of hotels in downtown Chicago, but you're not going to find a La Quinta Inn. You're not going to find a Motel 6.
You're right. Or a hostel. I know some people in San Diego were staying at the hostel over there. So, I understand what you mean.
So you're prepared to be stacking them eight deep in those rooms,
Yeah, but then again, the great thing, too, about Chicago, we've got enough of a good mass transit system.
That's true.
If they want to stay by the airport, they can take the Blue Line in.
That's true.
It's... And actually, when I was going to New York, I was staying in Astoria. I wasn't staying in Manhattan. I mean, I stayed in Astoria, and I took the L in, and it was great. So
yeah, I'm spoiled myself. I like the fact that I'm a local. I just with the Wizard World, I just drive. I'm 15, 20 minutes away from the Rosemont.
Very cool.
I just go there, bam, in, out. So, it has all the makings of a really good show. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it for sure.
Very cool, man. So, Ash next week, and then what's coming up for you as far as Geek to Me and Comic Book Warrior?
So, the Chicago Tribune, or not the Chicago Tribune, but the Chicago Media Corp launched this new site. It's called Chicago Now. It's an online a community for local bloggers, and I have just debuted on the Chicago Now site.
Oh, very nice.
Over from the Red Eye to Chicago Now, and you, again, can find me under chicagonow.com/blogs/geektome, and it's just me getting a chance to talk about all the local, again, the talent that's here, a lot of the stuff that's going on with comic books, all geek and nerd-related culture. If people, have something going on, whether it's a local comic shop opening or a small convention, that's, going to be a big part of, that's a part of my beat. And I'm certainly going to be at the Windy City Con.
Very good.
For sure. Chris Niesman and the Around Comics guys do a great job putting that together.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be there. And, a lot of great stuff to look forward to. I hope that if you're bopping around the interwebs, come by, check it out, and comment on what you see. And I'm there. I'm almost literally chained to my desk, being told to talk to people when they comment. So please help me.
Now I'm sorry. Are you at both? Did you say you're leaving the Red Eye to do Comic Chicago Now, or are you doing both?
No, it's all part. It's all part of the same thing.
Okay.
So just the Red Eye is now moved over to Chicago Now.
I see. Okay. Well, and for people who don't know, and I'm sure I've said this in the introduction as well, the Red Eye is the sister paper of the Tribune. It's a little more of a tabloid kind of quick read.
Yeah, it's like a commuter paper.
Yes, it is a commuter paper. There you go.
You can read it while you're on the bus, on the train, in the bathroom.
Absolutely.
It's just one of those, you get your quick bites, bam, bam, focuses, you get some news, sports, and pop culture, movies, music, all that. I also write for the sports section, too. You can see me every Monday in the Red Eye 5-on-5, where we're asked to comment on different sports topics and the like.
Very cool.
And then of course, Comic Culture Warrior, which you'll see almost every week. Posting daily or every other day new episodes where Jose and I talk about comics, comic culture, fanboys, fangirls, What did Bendis do this week that really annoyed us? You know?
Yes, I'm aware. Yes, I've seen. No, I've seen your reviews. No, I now let me ask you. Okay, because you're a reviewer, let's talk about the two big events that are happening at DC and Marvel right now. So you've kind of thrown your hat in the ring by your Bendis comments. So
you weren't gonna let me off the hook on that one.
What's up your ass with Dark Reign? What's your problem?
What's my problem with Dark Reign? Okay, I'm gonna tell you what my problem is.
Please.
With Dark Reign. Okay. I only get paid so much, and I can only buy so many tie-ins. Darn it!
Okay.
So
that's fair.
In all seriousness, my criticism is not any different. Many others have said the same thing. The events in comics in general is just getting to be too much. You had, Civil War. Then you had Secret Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Dark Reign, and then now you're going to have the big, Asgard thing that's going to happen next. And you just don't get a minute to breathe and say, "Wow, I'm reading and enjoying comic books." Now, don't get me wrong; it's up to the fanboy to say, "Hey, I don't want this," or "I'm not enjoying this right now. I'm just not going to buy it."
Right.
So, and that's what I do. So. On the show, Jose and I do like to make fun of some fanboys who have this completist mentality. And mind you, we see it in the shop. People who come in and feel that they have to buy every single title that's part of this whole Dark Reign event. Fine. There is that sort of completist mentality that, I'm sorry, the comic companies are taking advantage of it. They are. A criticism? No, it's just an observation. It's just an observation. So that's the whole thing. As far as with Mr. Bendis goes, I am a huge fan of Brian Bendis.
Very nice.
I'm looking right now on my shelf. I've got a copy of Jinx. I'm looking at it right now on my bookshelf. One of my all-time favorite graphic novels.
Very cool.
So I love Bendis. Could be Bendis, I would be Bendis. if I kill Brian Bendis and I consume him, do I become him?
Wow.
I'm just curious about that. Anyway.
Yikes. All right. I'll call the FBI. Wait a minute. Let me Let me put the call. Let me get the tracer line going here.
I think I said at least three catchphrases that the DHS picks up on.
All right.
Anyway,
fair enough.
As far as that goes, and I know Brian Bendis is doing what he does. He's making a good living doing it, and he's got a huge fan following. He sells books like mad. But personally, as purely as a fan, not talking as a pro, as a fan who loves his work, who has loved his work for a really, really long time, and who is filled with tremendous admiration for everything that he's been through and how he worked his way up to from the indies all the way. Mind you, I was one of those people who really loved the idea of him doing Ultimate Spider-Man in the very beginning when a lot of folks were complaining he was just going to get Peter Parker to swear. Okay, people were saying, now we're going to hear Peter Parker go effing this, effing that, blah, blah, blah. Okay, right?
Yes.
Well, I thought Brian Bendis doing Ultimate Spider-Man was pure genius. Okay? Well, now it's too much of a fanboy mentality now. I don't like the way a lot of women are portrayed in this book. I don't like a lot of the violence towards women that's going on in comics in general.
Well, wait a minute. All right, what specifically is he not doing right with women?
There was the whore incident with Dr. Doom and Ms. Marvel, which started off a whole string of things. Then you have
the whore. Wait, I'm sorry. What Doom called her a whore?
Yeah, because I will rip your heart, your whore heart, or something out of your chest. I had the book right here, actually, so it's funny.
Exhibit A. All right,
this
is good.
That got a lot of attention way back. And even John Byrne came out and said on the Byrne.
Oh, even John Byrne. Okay.
Yeah.
Gee, really?
Hold on. A lot of people get on him, but I'm going to tell you, first, I am never going to get on the other side, the opposite side of the fence of a Dr. Doom debate with John Byrne.
And I don't mean to pick on John Byrne. I'm just laughing because, John Byrne commenting on something is nothing new.
Oh, no, duh. But in either case, and it was funny. I was going, wow, John Byrne and I are actually on the same side on this one. That's bizarre.
Okay.
And this is my perception as a reader.
I understand.
Okay, so, you know,
it's cool.
I've had a lot of other Bendis fans. And again, I still consider myself a Bendis fan. And I don't think just because you're a fan of someone, it doesn't mean that you have to like absolutely everything you do. You can't criticize them.
Completely
agree. So a lot of times on the channel, people say, well, why do you guys hate Bendis so much? Why do you criticize Bendis so much? Well, hey, I love the Chicago Cubs, too. But they're driving me nuts right now, okay? And I criticize them like you wouldn't believe.
I understand.
It doesn't mean I don't love the team. You know, so Bendis is, you know, he doesn't know me from squat, you know. The very fact that we're talking about him right now, if he even listens to this conversation, would blow my mind.
Well,
in any event,
I don't think he listens when I'm actually interviewing him,
yeah,
so
really?
I wouldn't worry
yeah.
about that. Yeah,
I'm telling you,
okay.
I think there are people who listen, and then there are people who wait to talk. I think he's a wait to talk kind
oh,
of.
Oh, no. I'm teasing. Yeah. He just doesn't. No. He's engaged in the Bendis tapes. It's just, yeah, he's a busy guy. He doesn't listen to many podcasts, I don't think.
No, that's true. No. I mean, of course, I tease.
I understand.
And again, I say this with utmost respect for Brian Bendis. And I'm also going to say this. I am the, you know, that piece of gum that you get on your shoe?
Yes.
And then you wipe it off on the carpet?
Okay.
That's me.
Okay.
Okay. So the fact that you're even letting me go on this diatribe about Brian Bendis really speaks poorly of your judgment.
No, you're a reviewer, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the two big events. And I,
right.
you know, and
okay,
that's
okay. So yeah, and I digress there. So Blackest Night, two words: DC Zombies. That's what it is.
Now you see, I will disagree only because I think, as opposed to the usual zombie story, what I like about Blackest Night is these zombies are intelligent. And they cut to the core of these heroes that they're up against, and hurting them as much with their words as they are with their actions. And
I think that's very interesting. You're absolutely right there. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that I'm not using DC Zombies as a derogatory term. But I mean, although again, I have said that, and I've annoyed a lot of DC fanboys by saying that. They go, please don't call it DC Zombies. But let's call a spade a spade.
But it isn't, and you just said it yourself.
They're the heroes that were brought back to life.
Right, but they're right? but it's not a typical zombie story, and that's
but you still have to describe it as a zombie story.
This isn't a conventional zombie story. The only conventional zombie story that I'm enjoying is Walking Dead. And I'm just zombied out. I mean, I really am. I mean, I love 28 Days Later. I thought that was a great movie. I love Night of the Living Dead. There has been this steady diet of zombies, and again, 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. We must be wrong, because so many people love zombie stories, and it's incredibly popular. What do you think of the new Batman Reborn?
Detective Comics, Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams on Batwoman, is just jaw-droppingly beautiful.
Yep.
It's just, I am blown away by it. It's what comics were meant to be. That is just incredible, and I love the fact that we have a fully realized, fully rendered, very three-dimensional female protagonist. And it's just a great, great book.
I agree.
Of course, Grant Morrison on Batman and Robin. You know, how can you complain to that? And that's really Grant getting back to his roots and writing some really sound, fun comic book stories. Judd Winnick has totally won me over with his Batman writing.
Yeah, it's doing great.
Putting Dick Grayson under the cowl is just perfect for Judd Winnick. He just knows the way that character, how it clicks, and he writes it he's superior in every way as far as writing it. So I have to say, as far as the Batman books go, they've done an excellent job executing that.
Cool.
And Blackest Night, and again, you know, I know I said two-word review DC Zombies. I did read the prologue, and I did read issue one. I thought they were really, really good. And my buddy Jose he's reading Blackest Night. I'll pick it up from time to time. I'm just a vented out. That's just my
okay.
So, and it says the guy who's in the middle of writing the friggin' Obama book. You know, isn't that an event, too? I mean, who am I to judge?
No worries, man. Hey,
there are a lot of fanboys who are going, well, what's he talking about? You know,
so. Well, Ruben, honestly, I always have to point this out whenever I have a pointed discussion with a guest. Neither of us are wrong. That's the beauty of comics. We're both right.
Well,
I honestly think everything is subjective. Everything is for anyone's individual point of view. And I can understand those feelings of event fatigue and feeling like, you know, yeah, there are too many books devoted to one event. Let's talk about non-event books then. What individual books, and it doesn't just have to be from the big two. You mentioned Chew. So give me some of the other books right now that you enjoy.
Oh, goodness. Chew is right now probably one of my favorite independent books right now. John Layman is writing something that to me is totally unlike anything I've read before, and yet it seems familiar enough that I can read it and it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's tragic. It's quirky. It's incredible. It's just a great, great book that I really enjoy. And it's funny. In Chicago Con, I kept hemming and hawing with myself whether I was going to pick it up or not. I picked up Lost Girls.
Really? Okay.
From the Top Shelf booth.
Yeah.
And I've read the first two chapters right now.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, boy.
Well, Alan Moore said what it was, right, you know, right from the start, and you know, isn't holding back. So, yeah, what do you think?
I don't think I've read enough of it yet.
Okay.
The first two chapters is all just set up still. So, I want to think I know where Alan Moore is going with this, but again, he's a way better writer than I am.
Okay.
So chances are I have absolutely no idea where he's going with it. In fact, I'm sure I have no idea where he's going with it. So I'm just going to trust the man's talent and go from there.
Are you a fan of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Yes, actually, I picked up the latest issue also from Top Shelf too. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. Black Dossier was a little, you know, had lots of big words in it, and I had to get my dictionary. And for a writer, I have a staggeringly limited vocabulary.
All right.
But it's been great. I'm enjoying it. I've enjoyed it so far until I got to the 3D part at the end and of Black Dossier, and I was like, okay, Alan, let's be honest. You want everyone to right now to drop some peyote right here. That's what they should be doing for the last few pages. You know, you're putting in the 3D glasses because that's what DC made you do. Now we know why Scott Dumbier was let go, because he fought for the peyote and lost.
You know,
he remained true to the vision, and they said, Scott, you can't force fanboys to drop peyote.
You know what I can't do as a fanboy is, and I'm glad I finally wised up and like held on to a pair of 3D glasses. I can never bring myself to detach the damn thing from the book.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah,
I don't bag and board anymore, but for some whatever reason, it's like, no, man, I don't want to. You know, I think it is that collector mentality that's still ingrained in me, where it's like, no, don't ruin the book, man.
It's a sickness, man.
It is.
I need an intervention for that. And I wish they could get, like, those glasses from the 3D movies that work with the comics, because I've got a ton of those from going to those Disney flicks, you know.
There you go. Too funny, man. What other books are lighting you up right now? What books are you enjoying?
I know I got on the Marvel and DC for what they were doing with the Reigns. But you know what happened out of Dark Reign? One of the best books that came out of Dark Reign right now, Invincible Iron Man.
Very good. I agree with you.
Invincible Iron Man with Matt Fraction and Salvador La Roca, that is my must-read. When I get my stack of books, that baby goes on top. That's the first thing I have to read. And right now, Matt Fraction is just blowing me away with his World's Most Wanted storyline right now. I am absolutely loving that book. And that is a great thing that came out of Dark Reign. Just like Captain Britain and MI-13, was a great thing that came out of
Secret Invasion.
Secret
sure.
Invasion. And it, unfortunately, the book ended up getting canceled. But Paul Cornell and Leonard Kirk, oh, goodness. That was just an incredible, incredible book. Great, great stories, great characters, you know, really heart-stopping moments in there. Loved it to death. And, you know, we did a big goodbye to Captain Britain on the Comic Culture Warrior show.
Very nice. You know, if all goes well, we'll be talking to Paul Cornell a couple episodes from our conversation. So
awesome, awesome. The man is a truly gifted writer.
You bet.
Really gifted. And when I see all these other writers, you know your Matt Fractions, your Paul Cornells, yes, your Brian Bendises, you know, Jeff Johns, all these names, and they're names, and they deserve to be.
Sure,
they are really. I mean, again, Brian Bendis deserves to be where he is right now. And yeah, I pick fun at him because, you know what, there's nothing I can say that's really going to affect him and his sales. So it's all harmless, you know.
Oh, I'm hip. That's cool.
Know? But again, I have tremendous admiration, and when I read the stuff that they do, I know I have so far to go as far as in advancing my own craft as a writer. So these men are always a constant inspiration to me.
The lesson learned from all of the writers that we've discussed so far, though, is that they've been able to bring their voice to these corporate characters and given us new spins on them.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, I think Matt has followed in that tradition. I certainly think Jeff Johns has done that. I think Brian has done that. And, you know, there's other writers as well. I think Matt Sturgis is doing that right now at DC. I think Rick Remender is doing that at Marvel. Jason Aaron certainly is bringing his own brand to both Marvel and Vertigo in his books. I think, you know, that's the nice thing right now is that these creators are making a difference in the corporate books that they write as opposed to adapting to a house style of writing.
Yeah, and Jason Aaron did the impossible with me, which was basically got me to buy a Wolverine book. And I read Wolverine Weapon X just for the simple fact that he and Ron Garney are on it.
I'm the same way. I always read those atypical X books as well. I'm not an X-Men fan, I don't normally read Wolverine, but it is always when the quirky writers get on them, like Jason Aaron, or like when Greg Rucka was writing the solo book years ago. You know, and I like Dan Way, but I like Dan Way better on Deadpool.
Personally. No, he rocks Deadpool. He does. He's another guy that I'm incredibly jealous of, just because he has such impeccable comic timing.
Yes. Well, that's
comedy
the thing.
Comedy is one of the hardest things in the world to write. It's hard to write it for stage. It's hard to write it for screen. My goodness, is it almost? It's nigh impossible to write for comic books. Unless you are just one of those naturally gifted folks who has that sense of timing, like your Keith Giffens or your Dan Ways or, you know, your Kevin Rubios, you know, all these writers who are just naturally gifted, naturally funny people, and they can translate that onto the page. It's just really, really hard to do. And when another writer does it, it just makes me jealous, and I want to break their fingers.
Well, these are guys to shoot for then, as your comic writing career continues.
Definitely.
All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate your time. We'll be looking for Ash versus Obama next week from Dynamite, and looking for you online at Chicago Now and Geek to Me and Comic Culture Warrior. What am I missing any URLs?
I think you've got them all.
Fantastic.
And I'm going to tell you, this is the God's honest truth. The fact that I'm being interviewed on Word Balloon. I don't know what else. I think I've arrived.
Oh, aim,
I think I'm here.
Aim higher. Aim a lot higher. Come on, man. But I appreciate that. Now, Ruben, you're a local guy. I'm happy to talk to you. I'm always happy to see you at the stores and at the events. And we will definitely see you next week, I'm sure, bumping into each other as we shoot video at the Windy City Con.
Most certainly.
Nice to spend a minute with Elliot Serrano. Don't forget, Ash vs. Obama starts Wednesday from Dynamite Entertainment. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you that Word Balloon is all over the internet. Of course, we're at iTunes, at Newsarama.com, and of course, our own website, WordBalloon.com, where you'll find an archive of well over 200 interviews with comic creators. We've begun to do videos for Word Balloon as well. You can find those on our page at WordBalloon.com or our YouTube page, which is YouTube.com/WordBalloon. Questions or comments about the show? Make sure you hit the Word Balloon message boards. You'll find the link at WordBalloon.com. Or you can email me, John@WordBalloon.com. You can follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or on Facebook, where I'm there under my name, John Suntress. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.